Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Hosts Gene and Tim, along with team members
Teresa, Linda, and Annie,
are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Green Counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hello and welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. I'm Jean Thomas.
And I'm Robin Smith.
Today we're talking with Steve Castles of Cedar Cliff Vineyard and Nursery in Athens, New York. Steve has written a book called Grapes of the Hudson Valley and Other Cool Climate Regions of the United States and Canada. You couldn't get it any longer?
Just because the title says Hudson Valley, but it's really not the Hudson Valley. It's like a whole bunch of the places.
All right.
So, yeah.
He also writes articles for UMass Amherst, Rutgers University, and the Arnold Arboretum in Boston, Mass. Oh, and he has a schedule of speaking engagements all over the place. Today we're talking about the second edition, which is revised and updated to include New England grapes. Did I leave anything out, Steve?
No, that's perfect.
Good. But Steve is more than just a grape guy. In addition to operating a vineyard and making wine, Steve spent quite a bit of time for the past few decades serving as a full-time attorney for both the New York State Senate, 33 years, and the Department of Health, 3 years. His areas of legal expertise were things like health care financing, insurance law, racing and wagering, horse law, and municipal bond work. He was instrumental in authoring 25 or more laws affecting the oversight of wine and other alcoholic beverages, including how such beverages were made, marketed, and sold. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. I don't even know where to start. This goes on. You have a long history personally since the 70s, physically working in orchards and vineyards in the Hudson Valley. You grew up in Middle Hope and Marlboro, New York, where you worked at Ben Marl Vineyards as a teenager to pass law school 1973 to 1986. Then you moved to Athens, where you established a vineyard while still maintaining your vineyard in Middle Hope, of course, from 1975 to 2020. Then from 2007 to 2020, you were a winemaker and grape grower for Hudson Chatham Winery in Ghent, New York. From 1990 to present, you grow and propagate over 90 different heritage and cool climate grape varieties in Athens that you evaluate and make wine from. Briefly, you worked at Saba Vineyards and Mylea Vineyards?
Malaya,
thank you. But now have a permanent home at Dear Native Grape Winery of Walton, New York. Alfie Alcantara is the owner?
Is the owner, yep.
Okay.
His wife, Dina.
And you serve there as a winemaker and grape grower.
Yes,
you
I
know,
love them.
I feel like I'm doing an episode of This Is Your Life, which nobody remembers but us. Okay. You're immersed in the hands-on propagating and winemaking and local history and heritage varieties. What's the greatest attraction for you in all this in-depth activity of yours? Or is that like asking, what's your favorite child?
Oh, I would say there's several reasons. I mean, I grew up in Middle Hope, New York, next to my grandparents, and we used to talk a lot about like how things were grown then, and really from the 1920s forward, so I have an idea of how that was. So I like local history, and I like listening about that kind of stuff. And then also, too, the attraction is many people who want to remain in farming, you can do so, but you can't really sell your crops at wholesale anymore. If you have a vineyard, you have to have a winery or you have to process your stuff. Same thing like apples. I mean, it used to be you could make a living doing processed apples. Now they need to be fresh apples. You have to have a farm stand. So a lot of my work is trying to set up things and identify grape varieties that could be used by growers that are productive, fungus disease resistant, but also too, they make quality wine. So if you want to have a winery, you can do it that way. Or if you don't want to have a winery, at least you can grow the kind of grapes that a winery would want to have at a higher price so that you can stay in business. So I'm much more involved with farming aspects as far as keeping farms around.
So you have a lecture schedule that sounds very difficult to keep track of. One of your bios lists the topics you cover: wine, grape cultivation, 19th century American horticulture, and landscape architecture. I want to dig a little deeper into the historical and landscape facets of your resume. How did you get interested in those areas? And does it have to do with your family's deep roots in the Hudson Valley and the fruit and grape?
Probably the latter. Like Andrew Jackson Downing and Charles Downing from Newburgh, New York, were the first landscape architects in the U.S. and actually pretty much in Europe also. They helped develop the Smithsonian grounds around the White House, Central Park. Many of the mansions that were in this area were done by them. So again, it's all kind of like local history. Like, we lived in Middle Hope, and Andrew Jackson Downing is actually buried in the cemetery that's right next to our house. So like, so you see all these people. Wow. So it was more that interest of that. So that, again, it seems to me it's more local interest and people that were in this area. And what drove me to do more writing is because a lot of times I would read things that were about the Hudson Valley and they weren't accurate at all. In fact, we had one picture. It was a picture and it said grape varieties in Marlborough in 1920. And I looked at the picture and it was where I worked at Ben Morrow, and it was taken in 1980. So it was completely... And they gave the site of where the house or where it was like completely wrong. So it was like,
lie.
It was wrong about everything. So, and what happens is that gets picked up because once you get on the internet or you do like internet kind of, you know, blog things and things like that, it becomes the truth and people just lift it and it goes that way.
Yeah. So. Okay. I read your piece in the Arnold Arboretum's magazine, Arnoldia. Mm-hmm. Did I say that right?
Yep. Arnoldia.
Oh, cool. Titled The Prince Family, Pioneers of American Horticulture. I was interested for two reasons. One, I'm a history buff. Two, we just did an episode on John Bartram, a contemporary of the princes in the Revolutionary era. Can we hope for another book one day on horticultural history, please?
I've got several that are in the works. What I'm finishing right now, and actually I'm doing the final galleys today, is a book on grape varieties that were developed in Korea. So I'm going back to Korea soon, but these are hybrids that were developed in Korea, but they use a lot of the grapes that were developed in the Hudson Valley. So grapes like Verdelay and Delaware and Campbell's Early and Henrod Seedless and Humillion. So a lot of the grapes that were developed here in the 1880s were brought to Korea and they've used them to make new hybrids. So,
well, that's a switch.
So that's the book. That's what that book is about. So
that's great.
So, and the other book that I'm working on is actually a full-length history of the Prince family. Pretty much done, and I went from one publisher to another, and now I think I've got a publisher I can work with.
So. Need a beta reader?
So it's all pretty much drafted. It was just like rearranging it to what the publisher wants. So there's that book that I'm working on also, and then the final one will be a book on how to make wine out of hybrid grapes. Because most wine books, what I find is like most books that are written about making wine are written by chemists, and they love chemistry, and they don't really like people. So there's lots of tests and this kind of stuff, but they don't give you the broad picture of chemically and also biologically what fermentation is, how to control it, and also to the kind of varieties that I work with, the hybrid grapes. You make them into wines very, very differently than vinifer grapes. So vinifer grapes are the ones you've probably heard of, like Chardonnay and Cabernet Sauvignon and Pinot Noir. You make them very, very differently, and I think one reason that the hybrids have gotten a bad rap is because people were trying to make them like vinifer wines. They didn't do a very good job. The other thing, too, that I found is that it was supposed to always be a secondary tier product. So with vinifer wines, you would try and get like no more than 3 ton an acre. While with the hybrids, they said, how about 9 ton an acre? So they weren't very, or maybe 7 ton an acre, but it'll be like a lot of tonnage. So you're not going to have a good quality crop if you're tunning it that high.
So they were second-class citizens.
So it was like to be bulk, cheap wines. And the way you make it bulk, and it was cheap because you don't spray them as, I mean, they're much better to grow because they don't need rootstock. You don't have to spray them as often. They're more productive. You don't have to irrigate them. There's a lot of pluses to growing hybrids than there is the European grape varieties. They're productive and they have a very different flavor profile. But I think what you found is like people wanted to make them as, some of the university want to make it as bulk wines, and the way you make bulk wines is not only could they grow them cheaper, which they could, but they also wanted to get a lot more tons per acre, which meant that the quality was not as good.
And sell them out of a box.
Yeah, or whatever, or out of a tanker car. Yeah.
So speaking of books, we're here actually to talk about your Grapes of the Hudson Valley, and we're talking about the second edition. This is the version expanded to include New England grapes, so it's a treat to read and appeals to many of our audience. I, too, am a lover of historical information, and it's always about the story first, then about the practical stuff. Have you always had this big picture approach?
I think the devil's in the details. If you have a big picture, you still have to have the understanding of what's going on underneath. So I think I'm a detailed person from the standpoint of I grow grapes, but also, too, there are certain trends that you can figure out by knowing the details of each different grape variety. Like when it comes to like hybridizing grapes, there's a grape called Chancellor, which is, it's an okay grape, but basically whatever it has, it can transfer its genetic material very easily to other varieties and increases the quality of those varieties. So it's sort of like a racehorse. If you've got like a certain famous racehorse and it like has a whole bunch of colts, it's because it transfers that. I actually work with the Bartram's Garden, which is in Philadelphia. So
been there, done that.
Yeah. So they now have a new heritage vineyard. So what I did was supply most of the plant material for them.
You need an assistant?
Yeah. So it was a very, very nice place. So I was there last November. No, last May, I think I was there.
It is gorgeous.
Yeah, it was great. I took the train down, went to Philly, stayed a few days, went to the Bartram's, then came back and it did it that way. So yeah. So I work with them quite a bit.
The book is an encyclopedia of grapes, but I like the way you divide it into small biographies of known varieties of hybrids, like the French hybrids and the American hybrids, mm-hmm. and the New England varieties, and how to actually grow them from planting to pruning. Was your goal to make this book a tool for the grape grower?
Yeah.
As well as, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, because the book is gorgeous. It's a doorstop. You can haul it out into the vineyard with you, which I drag mine around with me when I go out and play in the yard. Because it's beautifully instructional.
It's a detailed book on grape varieties. So, and it's organized differently than most other grape books, because most other grape books do it either alphabetically or they do it on like how cold hardy is. Not anything else, just cold hardy. The book has a lot on genetics of like what they did and why they did it. So really by organizing by the hybridizer, you have an idea of where he or she, and there's a few she's, where they lived, why they did what they wanted to do, and then you put all the grapes they did together that way. I found that a lot more interesting to kind of do it that way.
So. Yeah, because if it's just a list of grapes, first of all, you have to know what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to learn about them, then you got to figure out how to know what to look for. So your system
and that
helped. Awesome.
It helps with the Hudson Valley ones because there's a great book called Grapes of New York, published in 1908, and it does it alphabetically. And if you do it alphabetically, you don't realize probably a fifth of all the grapes that were in that book, and it has like maybe 300 grape varieties, were developed in the Hudson Valley. Because they didn't do it that
way. And no provenance.
It was just alphabetical, so you do it that way. So I think it's just doing it by hybridizers is good. And also, too, when it came to like, the book has a lot on French-American hybrids, and the French-American hybridizers, what I tried to do is show where they lived and what they were trying to do. So like, for instance, a fellow by the name of Maurice Bacco. All he was trying to do is develop a grape that he can make brandy out of and that would resist black rot. That's all he cared about. But it turns out when you bring those grape varieties here, they make lovely Pinot Noir kind of wines, rosés. There's another fellow, Sable. All he cared about was growing things for a fairly bulk wine that would make something like a Merlot that would live in lime soils. And they had to live in lime soils because American grapes don't like lime. So, and French grapes, most of them, because genetically, they grow in lime soils. So he spent most of his time trying to create varieties, that were fungus disease resistant, that were productive, that would make quality wine, that would live in lime soils.
So, you have a nursery for propagating and evaluating the heritage grapes. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. And again, once you have information on grape varieties that are really suitable for the area, and when I mean the area, I mean northern Adirondack line all the way over to Canada, Korea, Japan, northern China. So it's that way. And actually, I'm working with some people in Japan in addition to Korea right now. So, and eventually, I'm hearing at least that Korea book, it's going to be translated next into Japanese and Taiwanese. So, so we're kind of just doing it that way. So, but once you have this information, you have to propagate these grapes and get them out to people. So, and what happens is most commercial nurseries, they have enough grape varieties. So they don't really want to have more grape varieties because they have to like take something else off their, you know, of their list. So what I've been doing is working with mostly universities, with other grape growers and trying to get them to put these grapes in the ground. And once they're in the ground, then they can make wine out of them and then they can sell the wine and people say, oh, I like Berdan or I like Jefferson or I like whatever. So if I can't propagate them and get them in the ground and get wineries to make wine out of them, a lot of this work is just, it's of historic interest, but not really practical.
So you sound kind of like a pusher.
A pusher?
What do you call
more of a Johnny Appleseed. I think a pusher has like a very bad
Well, you're just trying to lure people in. Yeah.
So do it that way. But that's the main thing. And the other thing too is like I ship a lot of like, and actually I'm finding I'm shipping a lot of my cuttings actually to the West Coast now because of all the heat that's going on there, particularly in Sonoma County and Oregon and Washington State, is they want direct producers that make lighter bodied red wines because at some point soon they're not going to be able to grow Pinot Noir anymore. There's a lot of red varieties that they won't be able to grow. So they are looking for something else. So I ship most of my cuttings to the West Coast. Also, there's the Washington State has a grape program there. And what I'm doing is I'm shipping my cuttings to them. And what they're doing is they're making sure that they're virus-free. And what they're doing is then they're certifying those vines and then they can ship them to West Coast nurseries. So nurseries out there will be able to plant them and then start offering those things.
Wow, it's spreading.
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to do. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in the introduction to your book, you specify the goals of your project. They're, one, identify the grape varieties known to be suitable for winemaking and table use. I love my grapes. What kinds of wine these varieties can produce, and then the genetics, which we've already got into a little bit, of the varieties and why it matters. Then you present growing basics and insights of the actual growing, which we love. I mean, if you can't get your hands in the dirt, what's the point? Is it your intent for this book to be useful as a text? It's already a tool in the vineyards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've worked with SUNY Cobble School. They have a fermentation science program, so they use the book to some extent. But really, it's used by the Arnold Arboretum because they have a new program for having a new whole section on woody plants like vines. So I send it to them, and also to, like with the Korea book, is like it gives the genetic history of a grape variety. So if you want to breed a new grape variety, you can look at what its parents and great grandparents to kind of find out what kinds of characteristics it has and what kind of value it would have. I mean, things like it'll have like a berry flavor, or it can take hot weather well, or its fungus disease resistant, or it's cold hardy. So by looking at the parents and grandparents genetically of that grape variety, you can say, okay, that's a grape variety like a Berdan that I want to use to make another offspring of that variety. So I spend a lot of time with breeders, actually, a lot of private breeders. So mostly in Minnesota. So Minnesota, Arkansas, Pennsylvania, those are the breeders that I work with mostly.
So we talked a little bit about climate change. You just talked about that in the Northwest. But it's time to close with Tim Kennelty's favorite question. And given your vast body of work, both historical and hands-on, you have a special perspective. What gives you hope for the future, both here in the Hudson Valley and in New England?
I don't know if I'd use the word hope. I think things are going to happen one way or another, whether you want them or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, with climate change, what you're going to see is you're already seeing a little bit in Latin America. They've had droughts the last 10 years. So they're coming north because they're starving. So that's how that works out. So whether you want it to occur or not to occur, it's going to occur anyway. And people are going to like react to that. If they're starving, they're going to move. So, but when it comes to like hope, I mean, there are certain politicians that are trying to do stuff. There's others that say it doesn't exist. We don't care. What I find out, at least in the US, since it is a quasi free market system, is that you have to look to my background's insurance law. Insurance companies, they know it's coming. So they're writing policies very differently now on the coastal areas. They're not going to, I mean, people are complaining that they have these beach houses and they're spending $40,000 a year on their insurance. I'm like, well, if there's the risk that your house is going to be blown away every 5 years, you have to pay it. So I think by insurance companies pricing what they believe is going to happen, that's going to change where people live and how they conduct their businesses.
Okay, reach to the pocket.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty much it. And I was going to say, same thing like municipalities. I mean, if they know the road's going to be washed out every other year, they're going to move the road. Mm-hmm. Or when it comes to subdivision approvals, you want to have this nice thing on the coast, but if it's going to wash out and then they're going to sue the municipality or the municipality's going to have to clean it up, they're like, we don't want these things there. So I think it's because of the combination of insurance companies, what municipalities are doing, I think that's pretty much those kinds of things are going to force people to do things differently. And also, too, if food costs a lot more money or you can't get those oranges that you always want because of blah, 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 you're going to start spending more money for them. So people will realize that you can't get these things or you can at very high prices. So I think people will change their behavior based on what occurs as opposed to we have control over the environment. I don't think we have control of the environment. You react to the environment.
Okay, I like
that. That's a very different thing.
That's right.
So as far as hopeful, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
maybe I'm a nihilist. I'm probably a nihilist. So like, it doesn't matter. So, yeah.
Okay, changing our attitudes. Yeah. Expectations, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, your house has been blown over 5 times. You're like, well, maybe I'll go somewhere else.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that concludes the first part of our visit with Steve. Next time, we're going to spend more time on the winemaking part of all this expertise.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Powers and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Greene Counties Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.